Welcome to the queue. My name is Nurse Bug. I'm your friendly neighborhood nurse surveyor.
And hi, I'm Tina Webster. I'm so glad you joined us.
Hey, I'm John Puglia, and I'm your friendly neighborhood consultant pharmacist.
Hi, I'm Santana Wollen. So glad you all could join us.
Okay, so welcome everybody. And we're going to be talking about Infection Prevention Day, infection control awareness in general. But April 5th, or at least this year, the first Friday in April, we celebrate the crucial role of infection preventionists who dedicate efforts to identify, control, and prevent infections in all environments, but specifically nursing homes is what we're talking about. They're committed to innovative approaches to limit risk, enhance safety, improve outcomes, and support best practice with staff. Some of the topics they deal with: hand hygiene is number one, work to educate staff on proper technique and timing, vaccinations of staff and residents. They're going to monitor antibiotic use and to avoid antibiotic resistance. They're going to ensure that catheter use is still appropriate and PPE use is correctly to minimize the spread of infection. And then they also oversee housekeeping when it comes to room equipment disinfection with appropriate chemicals, sit times. They play a crucial role in protecting residents and staff to ensure effective care and safe care. And Effective IP collaborates well. They seek opportunities for partnerships within LTC to protect residents, staff, and visitors. So a day in the life of an LTC infection preventionist. So this is what I could come up with on what they deal with on a daily basis. Reviewing and updating, new admits, the 24-hour report, lab and pharmacy results, antibiotic stewardship, the line list. And as a previous surveyor, I'm not really familiar with a line list. So could one of you explain that?
I think line lists would be the lines that are like invasive lines that are in patients, whether it's a urinary, like a Foley catheter or similar, and a bloodstream catheter, like a venous catheter that's used for antibiotic administration and medication administration. In some settings, well, they'll have a list of patients that have indwelling catheters. Those are potential infection risks, which goes back to the CDC's main topics to try to identify whether those lines are needed every single day.
Okay. When I read line list, I was like, what on earth is that? Because you don't usually hear it called a line list. So that makes perfect sense, actually. They also look at the outbreak response plans, the situation, organism, infection type, colonized site, the background, who, what, when, assessment, investigation, and then recommendations, your actions and interventions. It stated that their monthly routines were policies, procedures, training, surveillance and audits, hand hygiene, PPE use, injection safety, POC testing. I mean, the list goes on. Bloodborne pathogen exposure, cleaning and disinfection, transmission-based precautions, linen management. I mean, they're everywhere in the facility all the time. Yeah. They identify and report evidence of suspected or confirmed HIA and communicable diseases. They collect and document data on individual cases, comparing collected data to standard criteria for infections. Data sources include cultures, diagnostic tests, antibiotic orders, and/or admin reports, documentations of signs and symptoms to watch for, and then transfer and discharge summaries. I talked about QAPI updates, and I know that IPs are involved with QAPI, but again, that's not really my area, so I'm going to hand it off to one of you guys. What do IPs do in QAPI meetings?
Well, there's a whole section in your QAPI meeting that talks strictly about infection control in your facility. They would provide the data results for the previous month, basically talking about their findings, anything they found related to infection control violations, or what kind of education they provided the staff during the previous month. Things like that. The IP is very, very important role. And I think for QAPI, it really needs to highlight the fact that the facility is very focused on having a good infection control program.
When it comes to the meetings, that's where they would talk about like their audits and like if they need to make any changes to any PIPs or anything that are going on related to infection control in general. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, basically, yeah.
It said mock surveys, and then it said peer assessments. So I'm guessing that's more like audits of, certain areas. And then if there's a pattern or increased incidence of illness beyond the expected number of cases in any given period, it can indicate an outbreak. And it said, it gave an example of like influenza, and they have to report to the health department within 24 hours. I like that they kind of made this role and they took away from some of the others. Like, wouldn't that usually be the DON or the administrator that was tasked with reporting these to the health department?
Yeah, it used to fall under, you know, the infection control. Honestly, it didn't get a lot of true focus in nursing homes the way that it should be. And I'm glad that, you know, now we do have that position that's dedicated just for that, because it was so desperately needed in the long-term care setting.
Nobody really paid attention until COVID, I think.
I was going to say, Lindsay, as a former DON, two separate facilities. One facility, I was able to designate an infection preventionist, but the other, I was my own infection preventionist. So it was really like on a daily task for me when I was reviewing orders. I would always set aside those orders for any type of lab work. If there was like a trend going on, there's an acute on chronic change in a resident, you know, I'd make sure that I had that supporting documentation to begin with, especially if I felt like it was going to fall underneath the criteria of infection. Then as that lab work come through, you're reviewing that, you're trying to build your case together as you're reporting out your infection control, right? So you have lab work associated with this acute change. If you're seeing any signs or symptoms of an infection, you know, say very easily a UTI, you know, you have that UA, does it support for culture insensitivity? And then you have your culture insensitivity. And it's really important that you monitor the different stages of it so that you're following those specific criteria like the CDC guidelines on infection or McGreer's criteria. It's really hard to teach your nurses that, let's say they're trying to get a UA, they're getting a UA because the urine smells bad, but there's no other outward symptoms to associate with, you know, utilizing an antibiotic. That's when you start getting all these multi-drug resistant organisms when you're overusing antibiotics because you're not following those criteria. That's really hard, and I can't stress that enough as a former DON and infection preventionist, how important it is just to stay on top of that monitoring, even prescribing. Most of your physicians are reacting to the problem. They want to make things better, but sometimes we have to help them along the way and just point out that information to them that, you know, like, hey, we don't meet the entire criteria for prescription of antibiotic. Is there another better choice for us instead of jumping straight to an antibiotic? John, I know you have a lot of feelings on that too as well, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And the difficult part about this particular issue and what you've just mentioned about antibiotic usage in this patient population is that this patient population is generally a lot more complex in terms of trying to identify whether they're infected or not. They have other disease states, cardiovascular disease states and neurologic disease states that make it really difficult for us to say, okay, this person has a urinary tract infection versus this patient just has foul-smelling urine but no other signs of infection. They're also on a lot more medications that can either mask infection symptoms or can present as infection symptoms from a side effect profile. And so you end up with a really complicated process. So it is a little bit more easier said than done. And the additional complication often, Amanda, is that your providers are often hearing about this over the phone a lot of times. They're not actually always able to see the patient. And so there can be a little bit of a telephone game with that as well. And so it all contributes to difficulty and a challenge, but also an opportunity to be more vigilant about the way that we handle antimicrobials.
I think that was like the biggest part of me is like everybody, even though I might have had the title of infection preventionist, it's really everybody's job to assist. And the more education I provided, the more the nurses wanted to get on board with that. Like, okay, so let me think about this. Like, oh, well, Miss such and such has smelly urine, you know, like, oh, instead of calling the doctor immediately for antibiotic, why don't I start pushing fluids on her, right? Because she's also on two separate cardiac drugs, right? She's on a diuretic, still the same. We should get her up to go to the bathroom a little bit more before we moved on to the next step. I think a lot of people feel like that they're not intervening with those really small kind of minute steps. But really, honestly, that is still intervening. You are still giving a response to something, and it doesn't necessarily always have to be like 1 to 100. There are times where you can take it just a little bit slow in your comfort in your practice. Another thing that I had a part to do with as far as like infection control, Lindsay, was like I always wanted to make sure, and Tina, I'm sure you've done this too, is I love to do the color coding facility map for my infections. So that way I had pockets, right? If I was having pockets of certain bacteria or, you know, certain types of infections, that's where I would focus my education. Like this section, I'm having an increase of UTIs and, you know, 2 out of the 4 residents have the same bacteria. Well, that's a very good likelihood that is cross-contamination. So what can I do? Okay, so pull your whole IDT in, okay? Housekeeping, like, let's do an extra cleaning of these bathrooms if these residents shared the same bathroom, right? Let's do an extra cleaning. Make sure that we wash their hands. Let's wipe down their surfaces 1 extra time per day. Encourage good pericare. If they are wanting to wipe themselves, you know, let's make sure they get themselves clean. Let's make sure they have the right equipment to make sure they're clean completely. If we're providing that pericare, making sure that we are doing that in the correct manner as far as parts go, etc., to make sure that we're completely preventing that. And the same with respiratory, you know, that really came into consideration, like respiratory care with COVID. And I think our infection control programs are just going to get more and more in-depth and specific, which, like Tina mentioned before, is extremely needed in long-term care.
I'd always get really excited when I'd be doing my observations years ago. I'd see the housekeeper, they would go from the room and they would end in the bathroom. I would always cringe when I'd see them start in the bathroom and then end in the room. And I'm like, you just pulled everything into that room.
Yeah, but it's like those simple little things when you're going through, when you're going through your infection control meeting per month, you know, and y'all are reviewing your diagrams. That's one of the things, like help empower your staff to be a part of the change. And when you do that, you get more buy-in from them, right? You know, clean to dirty. That's how we move. And then also, too, don't forget in infection control, one of the things that I had to monitor was our vaccines. That's a big deal, is your vaccinations, your flu vaccinations, making sure they're up to date with their pneumonia vaccines, because this is a congregated area and these residents are more susceptible to these kinds of illnesses, which can really impede their daily living. And then, of course, COVID vaccines.
Yeah. The next article that I found, it was called Unit Guide to Infection Prevention for LTC Staff. It talks about 4 key areas: overview of infections and infection prevention, review standard precaution prevention basics, transmission-based precautions and outbreak management, ways to engage staff, and then MDROs, or multi-drug resistant organisms, resistant to different antibiotics. So like MRSA, MRSA, VRE, C. diff, ESBL, CRE, I mean, all these acronyms that we use, we know what they are. But Tina had brought up one that I hadn't really heard much about. So Tina, I'd love you to tell me all about it. I cannot pronounce it. You're going to have to do it.
It's a Acinetobacter, and it is a multi-drug resistant organism. And it's really shown its ugly face in the long-term care setting over the last couple of years. Whereas it used to be, you know, the MRSA was the dreaded one. Now it is this bacteria, this Acinetobacter. It's found mostly in hospitals, people on ventilators or the use of catheters. They have prolonged hospital stays. They've been in ICU for a good while. So usually you see it coming from the hospital. That's not necessarily always true, but once they come to the nursing facility, it's imperative that you have a great infection control program and that staff are washing their hands, they're cleaning equipment, especially equipment that's used by many residents, because this organism actually can live on environmental surfaces for a long time. It's really important that those things are cleaned. And I know, John, you can help talk about that as well, can't you?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern with Acinetobacter is that it's a gram-negative, so it's in the same kind of general category of bacteria as Pseudomonas, which is another bacteria that we see in both the hospital setting and in the long-term care setting, but more the hospital setting. But it is kind of the boogeyman bacteria because they produce resistance to antimicrobials pretty quickly. And so you have to use really broad spectrum or big gun kind of antimicrobials to treat Acinetobacter and Pseudomonas. And then they can also develop resistance really easy. And we just don't have a lot of drugs that can cover resistant organisms like this. With MRSA, you mentioned that, Tina, before. With MRSA, we still have a few medications that we can use to treat it. And it's not ideal to have to treat patients with MRSA, but we have drugs to treat it. The problem with Acinetobacter and some of these other microbes is that they are developing resistance rapidly, and especially in long-term care settings and hospital settings, which a lot of these patients, when they get infected, they end up going back and forth between these two settings, and you end up seeing really resistant organisms that are very, very difficult to treat. And the types of things that we have to use to treat them are pretty toxic to healthy people, but certainly to people that are medically complex, like these patients.
Can I ask a question of both of you guys for the Acinetobacter? Is it prolonged ventilation that you're seeing the bacteria occur faster, like i.e. like someone having to be trached, like relating that to good trach care, cleaning of your vents, appropriate disinfection of your vents, et cetera, that types of thing. Is that what you're
Because the longer the resident is going to remain on a trach, that puts him at risk for something not to be cleaned properly and that bacteria to enter into him or she or him.
And these types of bacteria like to live in more moist areas.
Yes.
So they're commonly found in like water sources and things like that.
Got
so you see them in the bathroom, but you see them also in trach areas where there's a moisture component to where,
catheters. They can survive exposure to various common disinfectants. Bleach all the way. Is that what that sounds like?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Okay.
And make sure you pay attention to kill times. Kill times, kill times, kill times. Kill times, kill times.
Well, I mean, I learned something because honestly, that was not one that often, you know?
I know. Thank you guys for sharing. I had never heard of this before, but thank you. That's really great information.
Yeah.
With 50 years of experience and experts across all areas of nursing home care, QSource genuinely understands the needs of your facility. We've always been there alongside you, and we've walked in your shoes. No matter the situation, QSource is prepared to tackle your challenges, solve your issues, and answer your questions. Let QSource encourage, educate, and empower you. Contact us at any time at qsource.org. We will always be here to help. And now back to the podcast.
Okay, so the last article that I looked into was best practices in infection prevention. And this one talked about infection rates. According to the CDC, an estimated 1 to 3 million serious infections occur every year in LTCs related to the organisms that we talked about. The most common include urinary tract, respiratory, skin, soft tissue infections. And then the most frequently reported illnesses were pneumonia, influenza, UTIs, and diarrheal diseases. The CDC guidelines for infection control in nursing homes talk about how staff should be educated and trained on the spread and exposure risks, know how to sterilize and disinfect equipment appropriately, especially resident care devices, environmental surfaces, you know, their tray tables, everything. We want to keep the air, water, environmental surfaces, laundry, bedding, all that clean. medical waste needs to be handled and disposed of properly, which seems like a duh thing. But when you're in the moment with a resident and you're moving things around and finishing up, you have to really think about it. I've observed some staff members that, they got it right 1,000 times, but while I was watching them, they got it wrong. And I gave grace in that because I felt like they were teaching moments, like, what did you just do? Tell me what you did wrong. And they think for a minute and they go, oh, I touched my face. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I was more of a teaching surveyor. Like, I didn't want to just be like, oh, and slap them on the hand. Like, I wanted them to feel like I was there because I cared. I mean, I did care. I care. And if you're gonna make a resident sick, I'm gonna stop you. I'm not gonna let you keep going so that it turns into a G tag. I'm gonna stop you because I want to make sure that everything's right. It talks about the hand hygiene policy as the primary measure for reducing risk. That's all I've heard my whole nursing career: hand washing, hand washing, hand washing. And it's true. It's absolutely true. How many things you can have on your hand at one time? It's so gross.
I was gonna say TDH. Last week's call, I think it was this month, had that huge presentation on acrylic nails, regular nail polish versus dip nail polish. If you have not seen that presentation, it was a great presentation. I would highly recommend that you go out on the TDH website and look for it. Ladies, acrylic nails, dip nail polish are no good. So no matter how much you wash your hands, you still got stuff there.
The other stat that they gave, it said, according to the CDC, healthcare professionals clean their hands less than half of the time they should.
That makes me nervous. Like,
but it's still, but you know what? It's the truth. And unfortunately, with staffing issues that facilities have had during the last couple of years, it's really bad because they're rushing. They're rushing to get everybody done. And unfortunately, they forget. They just forget.
Those automatic ones on the walls, whether they be the push or the hand sanitizer things, there were facilities that I would see that didn't have those in the hallway. And I'm like, that is such an easy way to be a visual reminder to your people.
Yes. Okay? Great.
What did you call it one time? You called it a facility we worked with. They called it the toilet reads, where in the staff bathroom, they post it in the staff bathroom. So everybody could read it. I think that's what they call it. They call it the toilet reads.
Yeah.
Put your hand hygiene for a toilet read right there so everybody can see the steps.
Yeah. When you're sitting there having their little break, they read it and they might learn something.
Yeah.
They talked about how audits provided insights into obstacles as well as benchmarks for improvement. So quappy. I mean, you want to.
Absolutely.
So infection prevention and control. I mean, obviously, it's a huge topic with many, many tangents in nursing homes. And QSORS can help provide best practice to ensure that your policies and procedures are up to date. Training is on point. Hand hygiene, procedures, cleaning. I mean, we're going to touch every area of your facility when it comes to this because infection control is from top to bottom, side to side. There's no in between. And we can also support new or seasoned IPs on how to audit, educate, and support staff. Maybe there's a better way to do something and they just didn't know. Providing them with that updated best practice is going to help just increase the overall outcomes in general. Do you guys want to say anything else before I end this one? We've done really well on this.
I love infection control. And I think I speak to everybody here. It's one of our passions here at QSORS. We're here to help you with anything from antibiotic stewardship, resistance, tracking, trending, making use out of your data. That is one of the biggest accomplishments. Like, you get all of this information and you get so overwhelmed by it, you don't know where to look. That's where we come in and we can help you with that to strategically place you far above your peers when it comes to infection control.
Amazingly organized infection control binders.
Aren't Amazing. They beautiful?
They really are. It's so satisfying.
It makes me so happy.
Okay, so we're to the teaser part for next week. Our topic of discussion is narcotic diversion in nursing homes. pretty excited about that one because that's a huge topic as well. Not as big as infection control, maybe, but it's a big, huge topic. Thank you for joining the Q's Weekly Podcast for all your nursing home needs and topics. And until next time, have a great week, everyone. Say bye.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for joining.
Bye.
Bye from the Q.
Thank you for listening to this QSource podcast. If you ever find yourself needing QSource to assist your facility, please reach out to us at qsource.org so our long-term care experts can help you through the process. If you want to hear more podcasts like this, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your favorite audio. Just search for QSource and you will find us. Thank you and have an amazing day.